Last week we started a new series in the book of Daniel. So we're going to be in Daniel chapter 3 today. It'll be page 875 if you want to use one of the Bibles in front of you. If you received a bulletin today, there's notes in the back. I encourage you to take some additional notes. A pastor shared the story of going to vacation to a dude ranch in Arizona. His wife had grown up going to that ranch on vacation times, and she thought he should go have the experience of exhilarating horse ride. He said, you know, honestly, I was never really comfortable around horses. I didn't want to let everybody know that, so he agreed to go. He said they went on a trail ride when they first got there, but it was far too tame to count as a ride because there was no possibility, he said, of falling and injuring himself. So the next morning, he said, I rode out with five ranch hands to take the herd of horses to a pasture about 3 miles away. All these guys were young college guys, had been doing this for a number of years. He said, we got there, we unloaded the stuff there. He said, everything went fine. But then on the way back, one of the college guys decides to have a race back. So he fires up his horse and they take off. All four of them take off. Now, when he got his horse, he said, you know, sometimes you can tell the character of your horse based upon the name of the horse. You know, if the horse's name is Valium or Pokey. But his horse's name was Reverse. And they said, that, listen, if you pull on the reins, the horse is going to go backwards, so try not to do that. Well, he said, I pulled back as hard as I could. The horse reared up like Lone Ranger's horse used to do, and then it took off like crazy. He passed four of the other riders on the way in. He said, for the better part of the mile, Reverse ran a dead heat. He said, the word dead sticks to my mind. We were not sauntering or trotting. This was all-out sprinting, as of the scene from a movie. The five ranch hands were college guys who lived on horseback all summer long. He said, Reverse and I passed for them. Actually, he said, Reverse was doing all the work. He said, he was just waiting to die. So while I was wondering how Nancy would spend the life insurance policy, the strangest thing happened. He said, I began to realize I might actually survive this ride. All he said I could hear was the pounding of Reverse's hooves. All I could feel was the rush of the wind in my face. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see the sort of look of the four horsemen. He said, I felt alive. And basically, he said, this became the most exhilarating ride of my life. He concludes by saying this. The only choice he made, Doug said we make, 35,000 choices every day. The only real choice he said he made was to say yes or no to the ride. Once he said yes to the ride and got on the horse, then the rest was up to the horse. That's really what faith is. He said, I did not have a clue what was going to happen to me. I did not know all the details of what would happen. If I had known, he said, I might have said no to the ride. But then I would have never known the exhilaration of the ride. You know, I believe it's similar to my experience coming here to Hillside Community Church. 26 years ago, all I said was yes to the invitation for the ride. I had no idea what the ride was going to involve. In fact, if I had known all the details, I may have turned down the ride. All that I had to do was have the faith to step out. And that's basically what we're going to look at today. Daniel chapter 3, we're going to see three men who had the faith to step out, take a stand based on their convictions. Just a little bit of reminder. Book of Daniel, our theme for the week, for the course series, is Be Resolute. We saw last week, Daniel chapter 1. Inner convictions help us overcome outward conformity. We all live in a world that wants to form us and shape us into its image. And Daniel and his three friends had some inner convictions that said, no, we will not compromise. We will not defile ourselves eating the king's food. I've wrapped this story around 10 words, always begin with the letter I. A little different approach. Then I have one simple, important lesson. The year is about 585 years before Christ. Nebuchadnezzar had destroyed the city of Jerusalem. He wanted to unify his kingdom, and so he decides to build, first word, an image. Chapter 3. Here's what happened. Daniel 3:1 says, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 90 feet high and 9 feet wide. Some people thought it was of him himself. Probably was of him. Probably was one of his gods. Nebo was the patron god of Babylonia. Either way, we're not 100% sure, but they would have bowed down and worshiped to it. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Imagine, 90 feet tall. Just getting that thing up. Gold. It wouldn't have been solid gold because they didn't have that much gold. But it would have been covered with gold. Glistening in the sun on a plane. An image. Image. What was the first commandment? Know the gods before me. Second commandment. Don't make any images. Don't bow down to any other images. The Greek copy, the Old Testament, says he built it in the 19th year of his reign, which would have been about 586. Try to picture that in this flat plain. After the image is the word invitation, verses 2 and 3. Certain people were invited to come out. Verse 2 says, he then summoned satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. Every political person, every person in authority were all invited. Verse 3 says, they all assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before. So here they are in the plain, 8-story high image. All the bigwigs in the whole province of Babylonia stood there, the whole kingdom. Daniel probably was not there that day, or he would have been involved in the story as well. What he's doing that day, we're not sure. But his three friends are there. They probably had snacks afterwards. You know, people donate cookies and iced tea after the dedication, whether it's a dedication of a building, it was a dedication of an image. So here's the instructions, verse 4. The herald, some guy named Herald, loudly proclaimed, this is what you're commanded to do, O peoples, nations, and men of every language. You say that they weren't all Babylonians. One of the things that Nebuchadnezzar did when he conquered other countries was he brought people back from those countries to his country and then trained them and used them. So he had people from different nations were there, plus a lot of Babylonians. Verse 5, as soon as you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. Okay, here's your choice. Music's going to strike up. Electric guitar, the piano, the harp, the horn. When all this music starts, all kinds of different music starts, what you're supposed to do is bow down and worship the image. That's it, pretty simple. Your option is don't bow, but burn. So bow or burn was the issue. I mean, what do these people... Easy choice. All the important people were there. Fall down, worship. If you don't bow, you'll burn. I still remember this as a child in Sunday school class. Gretchen, a woman named Gretchen, taught this to us. And back then it was flannel graph. So way back then it was flannel graph. And it, they were instructed to bow down. Verse 7 says, therefore, as soon as they heard, verse 7 is part of, at the end here. Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, all the instruments, all the people, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshiped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Everybody bowed down to the image. Well, not everybody. Informants, verse 8 says this, at this time some astrologers came. They came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Probably a wise way to address a king. King, live forever. You've issued a decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, all the other instruments, all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold. And that whoever does not fall down and worship the throne will be thrown in a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Who pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of the gold you have set up. Apparently, the king couldn't see everybody. He didn't see these three Jewish men not bowing down. And so some people helped him out. They didn't like them to begin with. They didn't like the fact that they were over them. We didn't look at chapter 2, but chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. He calls in all his magicians, all the astrologers of Babylon, and they say, tell me what the dream is and tell me what it means. No one can do that. So he says, okay, you're all dead. Well, Daniel finds out, and so they bring Daniel in, and Daniel says, well, God will give you an answer to this dream. So basically, Daniel saves the lives of all these men. Now, 20 years later, they're attacking Daniel's friends. They've forgotten about what Daniel's done for them. But they were jealous of these men. Daniel got a high position after he interpreted that dream, and he asked for permission to have his three friends in high position, so they were not appreciated by the locals. And so they denounced the Jews. They say they neither serve your gods nor bow down. And obviously the king has forgotten all about what happened in chapter 2 because he gets furious. Verse 13, the interrogation. Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods?" He should have known that from before. "Or worship the image of gold that I have set up." Now when you hear the sound, he gave another chance. "You hear the sound of the music. If you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you'll be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand?" So give him another chance. Okay, real simple. In case you didn't understand the instructions, music, bow down, worship, if not, furnace. He asked the question, then what God will be able to rescue you? Well, we know what happens next. Verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king. This is their insistence. This is what they insisted upon. "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we're thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king." Our God's completely able to do that. Nebuchadnezzar asked the question, what God's going to be able to do this? Remember when we studied the life of Abraham, we asked one simple question. Is anything too difficult for God? No. He says, our God's able to save us out of the fiery furnace. But even if he doesn't, even if he does not. Verse 18. "We want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." So even if God does not choose to spare us here, we are not going to. Why not? Well, what did we learn last week? There's a difference between convictions and preferences. Preferences are things that you have that you're willing to change. Convictions are beliefs that you build your life upon you're unwilling to change no matter what it's going to cost you. And these men had convictions. What was their conviction? Old Testament said, "No other gods before me, don't bow down." Sorry, king, we can't do it. We cannot. The furnace was right there. It was a furnace for smelting ore. They had a hole in the top where they put wood in and the ore in. They had a door in the bottom that they would get the metal out of, and they had a sort of a window on the side that you could look in and see what it was like. So there it is, blazing away. Can't do it, they said. No can do. The Inferno, verses 19 to 23. Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. He ordered, if one thing we find out about the life of Nebuchadnezzar, the guy rode an emotional roller coaster. He really did. In chapter 4, which we're not going to study, he's so proud about what he has accomplished that God has him go out like a cow and graze for a while before it comes to his senses. And he had a dream. Daniel interpreted the dream. He said, "Listen, king, if you humble yourself, you may not end up this way. But because you're so proud, God's going to humble you." He doesn't listen. A year later, he looks out upon his kingdom and says, "Wow, look what I've built." Next thing you know, he's out in the pasture. Lost his mind, like a cow. When the chapter ends, he finally says, I realize God's able to humble those who are proud. So the guy rides this emotional roller coaster. I think he had some influence in him. Emotionally reacted. "Sorry, we can't do this." "Okay, I'm going to heat this up even hotter. You're going in." Verse 20, he commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, throw them in the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, they were dressed up for this occasion, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent and the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These three men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. I mean, imagine the heat that killed the men putting them in. Now, Peter talks in the New Testament about fiery trials. Twice, First Peter talks about fiery trials. These guys were in a literal fiery trial. When we looked at that in that series in Peter, we reminded you that why does God even allow trials and difficulties in our lives in the first place? to assure us that our faith is genuine. Would you say these three men's faith, if they, in Daniel chapter 1, they were teenagers whenever they said no to eating the king's food. This is about 20 years later, so they're in the mid-30s now. And what do they say? Sorry, king, we can't do it. Okay, you're going to the fiery furnace. But I know there's lots of ways to die, but that would be a horrific way to go. They said, no, we can't. Peter even talked about suffering for doing what was right. If you suffer for doing what was wrong, what good is that? But when you do what is right and suffer for that, and that's what these men were doing. And some people may have a dilemma in their minds. They say, well, we're supposed to obey the government. The government says bow down, you should bow down. But there comes to a point where we have to obey God, not what the government says. And that's why even though the government says certain things we're supposed to do, sometimes we can't obey those because it goes against what God teaches. And these men said we can't. The intervention, verse 24 and 25. King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, weren't there three men we tied up and threw into the fire? They replied, certainly, O king. He said, look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound, unharmed, and the fourth looks like the son of the gods. He said, you guys got to look at this. I see four men. The furnace was big enough for four people, and they were walking around. Truth is, God is sovereign whether he delivers us or not. God doesn't always deliver his people. He chose to this time. When I was in college, I read a book called Through Gates of Splendor. Missionaries killed in Ecuador. Great impact on my life as far as missions is concerned. God didn't spare those men. But God used their death in order to challenge thousands of people to go into missions. Here he chose to intervene. Here he chose to spare them. Was this Jesus in a pre-incarnate form? Some people believe this was Jesus in a pre-incarnate form. Some people believe it was an angel. We don't know 100%. But there was a fourth man in there protecting these three men. The inspection, verse 26. Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out! Come here! So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, prefects, governors, royal advisors crowded around them. Try to picture this. Okay, they just witnessed three men being thrown into the fire. They all come out of the fire. Everybody closes in to inspect these guys in shock. They saw the fire not harm their bodies, nor was a hair of their heads singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. We used to have a couple attended the church here years ago. They've moved away. I still remember her saying, one of the things she liked about her husband, he did a lot of campfires. She loved to have the smell of the campfire on her husband. It stuck in my mind when I read this. These guys didn't even smell like smoke. I'm not real keen on smoke smell. But these guys didn't even smell like smoke. The only thing that burned off was the bindings that kept them bound. They walked around free. Is anything too hard for the Lord? Keep in mind, these were, like we talked about before, they were aliens living in a foreign land, in a land where the people who lived there worshipped foreign gods, lots of foreign gods. And unlike the children of Israel in the promised land, they would not compromise. They took their stand and said, we're standing by this. And we're going to go into the fire by faith. We're going to step forward by faith because we cannot compromise. They come out of the fire, they inspect them. Not a hair in their head. The robes were not scorched. There was no smell of fire in them. Talk about a testimony in a foreign land to people who don't believe in your God. Nebuchadnezzar then issues a statement. Talk about emotional roller coaster. He was furious, going to have him burned to death. Verse 28 says, Nebuchadnezzar said, Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel, rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defy the king's command, and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Talk about impact on those nearest to you. We're going to just start a series later on this month on work. One of the greatest opportunities you have as a believer and follower of Christ is to be a witness for him in the workplace, based upon how you work, your attitude, everything. Here were these guys working a job politically in a foreign land. They were in a minority, yet they had a powerful impact because they were willing to take a stand on their convictions to step out by faith. Therefore, verse 29, I decree the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces, and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other God can save them this way. Talk about a radical change. Okay. You got to bow down and worship this image. If not, you're going to fiery furnace. Now, all of a sudden, anybody even speaks a bad word about these guys, God, I'm going to cut you into little pieces and turn your house into rubble. Verse 30, then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. That's why later on, next week we're going to look at Daniel chapter 6. Daniel and his friends were such a powerful testimony in such a foreign context that they couldn't even find any dirt on Daniel at all because he lived such a life of integrity. Jesus said when he was here, let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father who is in heaven. You and I are to be lights. Now, why did God include this story? Of all the things that transpired in the Old Testament, why did God include this? In Romans chapter 15, verse 4 says, God, all these things that happened in the past were written to teach us so that through endurance and the encouragement of Scripture, we might have hope. So this story was included so we might have hope. What's my point this morning? Very simple. The instruction for us. Hebrews chapter 11 says, without faith, it's impossible to please God. Without faith, it is absolutely impossible to please God. See, the people, the writer of the book of Hebrews was challenging people who had begun in their Christian life fairly well, but weren't enduring. And so in chapter 11, he lists all these people from the Old Testament who proved that faith works. What is faith? Faith, very simply, is trusting obedience. Faith is trusting in God, and it's evidence that it's legit when you are willing to step out by faith. If you say, yeah, I really trust God, but I'm not going to step out, then you really don't trust him. Without faith, it's absolutely impossible to please God. Ray Johnson wrote a book called Jesus Called. The rest of the title said he wants his church back. But in that book, he talks about a new idol in North American culture. He said the new idol in our culture is what he called safety. He said Americans have grown up obeying signs posted everywhere. Safety first. He said, listen to a sermon that got him thinking about this. Over the last 30 years, he said, we've created the most risk-averse society in history. We're the most seat-belted, bike-helmeted, airbagged, knee-pad-wearing, private-schooled, gluten-free, hand-sanitized, peanut-avoiding, sunscreen-slathering, hyper-insured, massively medicated, password-protected, valet-parked security system inoculated generation in history. Don't ask me to repeat that. I know everybody falls in that category, but a lot of times people are just averse to any kind of risk-taking. He said, I'm not talking about risk for risk's sake, but I believe this is new safety idol is destroying our faith. He said, a lot of Christians don't serve. You know why they don't serve? Because it might not be safe. A lot of Christians don't dream big dreams. You know why? Because it may not be safe. A lot of Christians don't go on mission trips. You know why? Because it might not be safe. They don't share their faith or take a stand because it might not be safe. They don't give sacrificially. Why? Because it might not be safe. Most Christians don't break habits, take risks, build relationships, or have adventures. Why? Because it might not be safe. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego live by faith. How do I know that? They are not mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11 by name, but they are mentioned. Hebrews chapter 11. Verse 32 says this. After he lists all these different people, he talks about Abraham's faith, Noah's faith, Moses' faith, how Abraham trusted God no matter what and stepped out by faith. He lists Gideon, Barak, all these. He says in verse 32, what shall I say? Then verse 33 says, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions. There's Daniel. Who quenched the fury of the flames. There's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Hebrews chapter 11. Why did they get in Hebrews chapter 11? Because they stepped out by faith. They trusted God and acted on it. What is it for you? When we were missionaries, they put us through what was called stress camp. They wanted to see how we'd handle stress before we became missionaries. 2 weeks backpacking in British Columbia on an island. And part of it was rappelling. got on a mountainside one day, and they latched us on the top, and they said, okay, lean back and go for it. There was a guy named Mel from Alaska. He was a big guy. And so when he latched on and leaned back, he just could not get over the hump of leaning all the way back and trusting the person who was holding the rope. That's what the Christian life, Hebrews 11 says, that's what it takes to be pleasing to God. Because without faith, he says, it's impossible to please him. He says Moses lived by faith. The walls of Jericho fell down by faith. Abraham had a child by faith. Truth is, life requires faith. You get in an elevator, you don't think about it. You get in your car, go out on the highway. You know how many 16-year-olds get their drivers every year? And they're taught by guys like Boslow, so. Who was I talking to recently? And they said their daughter decided not to get their license. And I said, oh good, we got a couple more years on that one. Every time you eat out, every time you say marriage vows, you're really living by faith, because you really do not know what's going to come next. The Christian life requires faith. See, this message, I could have preached this message with the same theme I did last week about convictions, because these guys had convictions, did they not? They were not going to compromise those convictions. But convictions and faith go together. Convictions say, I got beliefs, I'm not going to compromise. Faith says, I've had my conviction, I'm not going to compromise so much, so I'm willing to step out and take that leap of faith. Doug talked about it earlier. We're saved by faith. And really, Doug put his faith and trust in a Jesus he's never seen. That's faith. We face our trials by faith. Some of you may feel like you're in a fiery trial right now. What do you do? We've talked about this before. You and I have absolute control over nothing. You don't know what the doctor's going to say next week. You don't know what's going to happen to your kids. You don't know what's going to happen to your grandkids. That's why having faith in a God who's in control is so important. Attempt ministry by faith. We need more small group leaders. I believe God has some in his group, but sometimes you're just afraid to step out by faith and say, you know what, I want to do that. Or work with VBS, or go on a missions trip. See, in Hebrews chapter 12, after he lists all these people in the Old Testament who showed that faith works, in Hebrews chapter 12, he says, he starts with the word therefore, and he says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, in other words, since we have all these different people who've already proved that faith works, he says, we need to lay off everything that hinders us and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Then he says in verse 2, fixing your eyes on Jesus. That's the key. Think about it. Matthew chapter 13. Jesus puts his disciples in the boat. They start across the Sea of Galilee, and a storm comes up, a really bad storm. In the middle of the night, they see Jesus walking on the water. When they see him, Peter, who was very impulsive himself, says, Lord, command me to come to you on the water. So he says, come. The truth is, there's a book by this title. If you want to walk on the water, what? You got to get out of the boat. That's faith. You don't know what's going to happen when you get out. You don't know what's going to happen if you go on a mission trip. You don't know what's going to happen if you work with teenagers. That's faith. That's what the Christian life is. That's what Hebrews writer says is possible to please God without it. Truth is, John Ortberg got the ride of his life because he was willing to step out by faith. And I believe you're going to get the ride of your life when you're willing to step out by faith. Trust God no matter what. Faith is trusting him when you do not know what's coming. It says Abraham went not knowing what he was going to get into. That's faith. Let's pray. Father God, thanks for the illustration of these three men who had convictions and had faith. Lord, I pray you'd help all of us to learn a lesson from them, that we would be willing to take some risks and step out and serve you in new and creative ways, knowing that you are complete control. I ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Thanks.